What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
Hey, amigos. You know what's really easy to do and even easier to forget? Please help me out and hit that like button if you're listening on YouTube. And if you're listening somewhere else, what the hell? Pop in, give me a thumb. Say hello while you're at it. It helps me a ton with the algorithm. And besides, it's real nice to see you there. And now, on to the show. Oh, shit. Welcome, friend. I'm happy to have you here with me on National Weed Appreciation Day. Every March 28th, we remind ourselves that not all those pesky weeds are worth plucking out of your garden. In fact, many are medicinal and nutritious, and often get a bad rap. Dandelions, for example, are high in vitamin C. Ain't that something, Chester? Well, I guess we all celebrate in our own way, don't we? Well, let's head inside. So much for my horticulture segment. Hey, check out simplyscarypodcast.com. For $7.99 a month, you can get our whole catalog ad-free. Have I mentioned that before? A little deja vu there. Anyway, become a patron today. So tonight, we welcome back our good pal Rory Duane for the next installment of the Death Patrol. Last time, back in Season 7, Episode 19, we met Detective Sergeant Hank Jones and his partner Saul in the Nameless City, an afterlife realm where souls continue on after death. The pair investigated a series of murders committed with enchanted weapons, uncovering corruption in their own precinct and discovering that Hank's longtime informant, Vanessa, was the killer. In a tragic final confrontation, Saul sacrificed himself to save Hank, taking down Vanessa with his dying breath. Tonight, in Untouchables, we rejoin Hank 1 year later with his new partner, Creed. When Moon is stolen and souls start disappearing, they must venture beyond the city's boundaries into places no detective has gone before. So, without further delay, from author Rory Duane, I give you The Death Patrol 2, Untouchables. figure stormed around them, half shadow and half horror. The ground pulsed with energy. The beast was close to awakening. Hank let off two shots, looking around for his partner once more, but couldn't see him. He was surrounded. Checking his revolver, one bullet laid waiting for him. He stuck the revolver's barrel beneath his chin, watching the demons coming closer. He pulled down on the trigger. Detective Sergeant Hank Jones exited the vehicle, rain pelting down from the thick clouds of bruised purple. His partner was right behind him, and they made their way toward the nightclub. The Cleaver was the number one place to find information on new ghouls and goblins that inhabited the nameless city, and Hank and his partner in crime, namely Detective Creed Cassidy, were on the hunt this night. They approached the line in front of the club and Hank flashed the doorman his badge, then entered. The music was deafening, strobe lights bright enough to instill migraines in a stone. But he ignored the invasiveness of the club to his senses and made his way to the bar.
If it isn't my two favorite pains in my ass,
the barwoman shouted over the music. Bella slid Hank a glass of whiskey neat, just how he liked it. Creed was content surveying the crowd, leaving the talking to him as usual.
Hey, Toots, how's things?
Asked Hank.
Busy as ever.
We need information.
Bella raised a brow.
How strange.
Pays well if it's legit.
Hank sipped the whiskey.
What do you need, Hank?
Heard there's a new ghoul running the underworld of the Nameless City. Heard he's kidnapping fresh meat off the bone ships, right under the Harbinger's noses.
Well, that's where you're wrong.
Bella smiled.
You gonna tell me what I need to know, or do I have to shut you down again?
Bella sighed.
All I heard was a name. They call him the Weaver.
Thanks, Toots.
Hank slid an envelope full of stoppered souls across the bar.
Anytime, Hank, Just don't go doing anything stupid.
Hank nodded, finished his drink, and they exited the nightclub. The throbbing energy shifting through the ground, growing distant. Back in the car, Creed stuck a toothpick into his mouth and twirled it.
You sure we can trust her? Trust? Hell, I don't even trust you, partner.
Hank started up the engine and it came to life with a roar. They roamed onward through the nameless city. The storm raged overhead.
Where to now? Asked Creed. Home. I haven't slept a wink in 3 days. Aren't you tired?
Creed shrugged. Hank dropped Creed off at his house and then drove to his apartment. Climbing the steps, he let himself inside, then poured himself a drink. It had been 1 year since his old partner Saul had bit the bullet, and Hank raised the glass to the sky, then to the ground, considering Saul could just as well be in hell as in heaven. The city had been relatively quiet that year, but the past month's kidnappings of fresh meat had begun to rise. Those new to the afterlife were still in a daze, and it was too easy to round them up and herd them off like cattle. Weaver. This ghoul must be the man, or woman, behind the kidnappings. He finished his drink, then stared at the bottle longingly, but thought better of it and went to bed. Sleep soon overcame him. Screams woke him. He sat upright, sweat trickling down between his shoulder blades, and the room was unnaturally dark. Looking out the windows, he saw no trace of moon in the sky.
What in the underworld?
He muttered. Screams could be heard coming from everywhere surrounding him. Ghastly screams, like someone pulling your lungs out through your throat and then back up your ass. He dressed quickly, then went outside, and looking around, he saw no sign of moon in the sky above. Someone had stolen it. At the precinct, Hank and Creed waited at their desks for the chief. It wasn't 5 minutes before the old man waved them inside.
"I suppose you know that Moon's been robbed," asked the chief, voice grinding like gravel. "That crossed my mind," said Hank. "Don't give me back lip, Hank. Fresh meat turns into ghouls if the darkness lasts more than 3 nights, as you know."
The chief sighed.
"You're my best 2 detectives. Get out there and crack some skulls. I want Moon back before the fresh meat turns to eating innocent civilians."
"Got it, boss," Creed nodded. Outside, the storm was petering out, sending final waves of rainfall down onto the nameless city. They entered their car.
"Where to, partner?"
"I have an informant. He might just know where this weaver is holed up. I have an inkling that this ghoul is behind Moon's robbery."
The engine came to life with a roar, and they soared along the street, headed to the northern sector of the city. Outside a gun shop, they parked and exited their vehicle. The door was unlocked, so they entered. Hank found Gus behind the counter, holding a high-powered sniper rifle, which he was cleaning.
"Ah, I was wondering when you'd show up, Hank. Long time no see."
Gus was a well-known ghoul in the nameless city, and had turned from his flesh-devouring ways for more peaceful means of earning a living, like providing the honest civilians of the nameless city with firearms.
"We need info, Gus."
"I thought so."
Gus placed the rifle onto the counter, went and locked the door.
"Follow me."
Gus led them into the back of the shop, down a stairwell, and into his basement.
"What are we doing down here?"
Creed muttered, and Hank had to agree.
"Where are you bringing us, Gus?"
"I've been the go-to artificer for enchanted weapons since you wiped Vanessa off the map last year."
Gus went and flipped a hidden lever on the wall, and the next thing, the ground began to sink.
"Whoa,"
said Creed. The floor dropped by 10 feet, revealing rows upon rows of weapons, armor, and more.
"Have your pick. I'll give you guys a good discount. You'll need it for what comes next."
Gus sat on a crate and crossed his arms. Hank went to a bulletproof jacket and inspected it.
"Enchanted?"
"Yes. All of these are enchanted."
Gus spat onto the floor.
"No one must know I had these, Hank. You're one of a select few customers I deal with, and I trust you not to fuck me."
Hank took off his coat, and Creed followed suit. They slung on bulletproof jackets, and Hank outfitted himself with a pump-action shotgun. Creed settled for a sniper rifle and a few grenades.
"What's the damage for all this?"
"Tell you what. Since you're going to be going into the Evermarshes, I need some Etrillium brought back, as my supply is running low. If you bring me back, say, 10 kilos of Etrillium ore, we'll call it even. Deal?"
Hank frowned.
"And why would we be going to the Evermarshes? The place is filled with rogue ghouls who would slit our throats if we tried to step foot in there."
"I heard that the Moonlight Thieves escaped into the Evermarshes."
Gus shrugged.
"I'm sure you don't want half the city turning into ghouls now, do you? They will be hungry, and nothing can protect the innocence of the city when that happens. except enchanted weapons and armor. But I don't fancy handing out my collections for free.
You got yourself a deal, nodded Hank. We really going to the Evermarshes? Asked Creed as they sped their way south through the city. Don't we need backup? The chief isn't going to allow us to enter the Evermarshes, Creed. So we need to get in there, get Moon and Gus's Etrillium, and get the hell out of Dodge before anyone becomes any the wiser. Easier said than done. The Evermarshes were just beyond the forest to the south of the Nameless City, and it was new ground to explore for Hank, for even after spending 2 centuries on the job, he had never ventured into the foggy, notorious bog that was the Evermarshes. They exited the city, pulled off the freeway, and took a turn south, headed down a bumpy, pothole-filled road that must have seen little to no traffic in decades. After half an hour, the road came to a barrier, a large warning sign proclaiming this as the end of the Nameless City's territory, and to go beyond was peril. Hank grabbed his shotgun from the trunk, Creed his rifle, and they locked the car. They passed by the barrier, following the curving road which came to a dead end, with dark forest surrounding them on 3 sides. Without saying a word to one another, they approached the southern patch of the forest. The trees were majestic, untainted by industry, and none dared journey out this far from the Nameless City, especially not to tempt fate by cutting down members of the dreaded Black Forest. As Moon was sentient, so too did these trees seem to have some type of awareness about them, and Hank could almost feel whispers floating through the air, wriggling their way down his back and along his spine like ethereal serpents. He shuddered off the thoughts and doubts. They were Death Patrol officers and had no fear. Their flashlights were worth their weight in gold as they made their way south, Creed holding the compass, as without Moon there was little to no natural light in all the Nameless City. Hours passed, and they made their camp as Hank's feet were beginning to ache like a horse's tits. Hank and Creed began to look for deadfall, as neither wanted to attempt angering whatever spirits inhabited this dreary forest. Soon they met back and got a fire going. Sitting there watching the blue flames gather, as all fires in the Nameless City were blue, Hank stared across the fire at his partner in crime. You don't say much, do you, partner?
What's there to say?
Well, my last partner, Saul, he was a talker. Now you, on the other hand, I haven't learned anything about you in the last year we've been working these streets of the Nameless City.
All right, what you want to know?
You a soul sucker?
Asked Hank, straight to the point.
No, I don't dabble in dark magic, Hank. I leave that to the politicians and officials.
Do you remember how you died?
Shootout. Bank robbery.
You?
Hank shuddered.
I don't remember.
Yeah, I heard some of the fellas in the precinct talking about you when I was first brought into the fold, and not your partner, you see.
Is that so?
Shit. Every Death Patrol officer knows your name.
You see yourself as an untouchable now?
If you mean if I see myself as too good of a Death Patrol officer to bite the bullet on the job, then no. I don't think there's any power to be watching over us. If that's what you're getting at.
Hank harumphed.
I'm not talking about God, you shit for brains, maggot. I'm talking about luck. Me and my last partner were working these streets for over 100 years. I've seen the Nameless City's dark underside, and then some.
Haven't we all?
Creed sighed, who turned over, lying down, facing away from Hank, and answered no more questions.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
They awoke to the flames of the fire just dying. Hank shuffled over and woke his partner.
Come on. We'd best get moving. Only 2 more days left till the city turns rampant.
Hank shouldered his shotgun. What happens if we don't get Moon back in time? What, fresh meat turns on fresh meat?
Let's just say that the fresh meat coming off the bone ships will soon be ripping apart any and all unfortunate enough to be around them. We'll all be food for the Harbingers.
They set off south. What's with these Harbingers anyway? I thought they patrolled the Nameless City's boundaries. Won't we run into one out here?
Creed looked over his shoulder, a shred of panic in his tone.
We're Death Patrol detectives, Creed. That means we have a duty, and if we have to, we'll kill anything we run into out here. Harbingers included.
They trudged along through the Black Forest, silence cloaking them like a funeral shroud. The large ancient trees began to grow slimmer, younger, and soon they exited through the tree line, coming out onto a large open bog.
The Evermarshes, Creed whispered. We might just be the first ones here since forever. Don't think so,
Hank muttered. How?
Tracks.
Hank followed the footprints left in the mud. They looked fresh.
Who on God's green earth would be out here? Mutants, perhaps. Ghouls, more likely.
3 hours they marched through boggy land, each passing hour drawing more and more energy from their flashlights.
How far does this damn bog go? Until we see the flames.
Flames?
Flames of the undead.
Another hour passed, and Hank was losing hope. What if there were no flames? He had heard from some reliable informants higher up the chain of power that the flames drew unsuspecting wanderers through the Evermarshes, but whether it was to confuse or guide the wanderer, Hank knew not. Soon, lights appeared in the distant horizon. Their flashlights died, but they remained, stomping through the bog, getting muddied down in places. And by the time they reached the flames, they were knee-deep in water. Hank sensed movement then. He turned, surveying the land. But anything 10 paces away from the flames was midnight black.
You hear something? Maybe. Maybe not.
Hank pulled out his revolver, and that's when he saw them. Dark figures. Ethereal demons, floating above the water without making a sound. Harbingers.
Holy sweet Jesus fucking Christ on the candle,
barked Creed.
Careful.
Hank held up a hand.
I don't think they can come any closer. You sure?
Creed took a step back, closer to the flames. Hank watched as they drew nearer, close enough to smell the rancid flesh that lurked beneath their black robes. And between that and the stench of the dark water of the Evermarshes, Hank's mind began to swirl uncomfortably.
You okay, boss?
Hank felt the ground give way, and his world went dark as he collapsed. He felt hands grab hold of him. Cold hands. Hands of the dead. Opening his eyes, the light surrounding him was blinding. The figures around him grew from blurred shapes to pristine images, clear cut like diamond on glass. There were 6 of them, surrounding him. Each one held part of him, and he felt a power floating through their bodies into Hank.
Where am I?
Don't you know?
Spoke a familiar voice. Hank turned and saw none other than Saul stood behind him.
No, you died.
I did.
Am I dead? Like dead?
Saul shook his head.
You linger on the edge of death, old friend. You linger on the cusp of oblivion. And if you continue to traverse this path, nothing lies ahead of you but darkness.
Then help me.
Hank pulled himself away from the Watcher's hands, those figures now pure crystals of light.
We shall hold off the Harbingers as long as possible, old friend. But it won't be for long. Run for all your might. Run and make it. Or else there will be no hope for those who dwell in the realm of the dead.
Wait, is this heaven? Are these angels?
But Hank's questions fell on deaf ears as the scene surrounding him began to blur and haze until the light itself was gone.
Hank!
He heard the voice but couldn't put a name to it.
Hank, we need to fucking move right now.
And then it all came rolling back to him. Saul being murdered, his new partner, the Evermarshes, and chasing this ghoul known as the Weaver. He opened his eyes, and swirling in the air above them were about a dozen Harbingers. He grabbed his revolver from the ground, took Creed's offered hand to stand up, and dusted himself off.
Come on!
Creed pulled at Hank.
We need to run!
They ran. The murk followed them, the Harbingers growling at them with every watery step they took, threatening to break through the barrier that held them back at any moment. Hank's breath was ragged in his ears, heartbeat thumping like some fire god's drum, as his vision swam from the blue of the flames to red and back.
I can't.
Hank stopped and regained his breath. He wasn't cut out for cross-fucking country sprints.
Come on, Hank. We need to haul ass.
Hank pushed Creed back a step.
You go. I'll only slow you down.
I'm not leaving you. You're my partner in crime, old man. And the fuck I'm leaving the man behind?
Hank gasped in breath and nodded.
Fucking demon bastards!
Shouted Creed, aiming his pistol and letting off a shot. The shot hit the mark. A Harbinger exploded into green, poisonous-seeming gas, and it dissipated into the air. The Harbingers surrounded them let out a blood-curdling moan, making them both block their ears with their hands. Hank stood, aiming his shotgun, and blasted another Harbinger apart. The moans intensified, making Creed fall to the ground unconscious, and Hank was half delirious from their moans. But he stayed shooting, taking four more Harbingers down. And just like that, they turned and fled back into the night sky. Hank knelt beside his partner, trying to regain some morsel of strength, and then he shook Creed awake. Creed's face was deathly pale, eyes wide orbs, reflecting the light from the flames.
What happened?
Asked Creed.
We're rid of them. That's what happened. Now come on. We need to follow these goddamn flames until we either get eaten by something or we find whatever we need to find.
Which is what? Remind me again.
Creed was back on his feet just barely and wobbled like a rotten tree trunk in a storm.
We need to find this Weaver and the Moonlight Thieves.
Creed nodded. They continued following the flames after reloading their weapons. An hour passed before something white appeared on the horizon, and the closer they got, the more they realized what it was. A beach. The flames continued out into the water. On the beach lay a bone ship, and the marks in the sand revealed the fact that there had been another ship here. Perhaps whatever or whoever they were chasing had gone out to sea, which seemed madness, as nothing lay out in the eternal sea but high waves and fearsome monsters.
Don't even think about telling me we're getting in that thing.
Creed shuddered.
Look, if we want Moon back, and to find more information about this damned Weaver, we need to do this.
They pushed the bone ship out into the surf and then climbed aboard. The waves were rolling them out to sea, seeming to take up a path of its own making. Soon the beach drifted away from a tan smudge to darkness, and the flames lit up the roiling and tumultuous sea. In the distance, they saw a large ship, the flames lighting up its stern. The bone ship carried them forwards, and they silently approached the rear of the ship, the bone ship stopping at a platform, which they climbed onto.
What in the hell is this ship doing out here?
Whispered Creed. Hank shook his head.
Dunno.
A series of stairs brought them into the interior of the ship. Hank heard footsteps and grabbed Creed, hauling them both into a dark room. The footsteps grew nearer, multiple steps.
Weaver said get the next bone ship, so that's what we do.
A muffled, hoarse voice spoke from the other side of the door. Hank could barely make out Creed's face in the dim light of the room, but he saw the man's eyes widen at the name of Weaver.
He's here,
whispered Creed. Hank nodded. The footsteps faded down the corridor and they exited the room. They climbed the stairwell at the end of the corridor and came out onto the deck of the ship. Figures stood at the far end, about a dozen of them, ghouls by the look of their hunched spines and loping gaits. They seemed to be fixated on a few crates placed before them, so none were paying the stern of the ship any mind. Hank and Creed crept closer, guns readied. They were 30 paces away and could hear the conversation.
Next bone ship should be coming by at any time,
one of the ghouls was saying.
Yeah, boss, we'll get it this time. Have no fear,
another responded. Hank took a closer look at the boss, edging around the crate they were hidden behind. He was tall, dressed in a trench coat and a peaked flat cap pulled low, so his face was hidden in shadow. As Hank strained his neck to get a good look at him, the boss turned and spotted Hank.
What the?
The ghoul ripped open his trench coat, revealing dual pistols on his belt, which he drew. Hank dove back behind the crate as bullets ripped into the wood.
Nice going,
hissed Creed. The rest of the ghouls opened fire. Hank heard the boss giving orders to flank around the crate, so he leaned out and let off a blast of his shotgun, the rifled slug in the barrel catching the nearest ghoul and ripping the fucker apart like chowder. Creed leaned out the opposite side of the crate, his sniper rifle peeling through the midnight air and catching a ghoul in the face. Two down, but they were closing the distance now, spreading out, and they would be exposed at any moment.
You still got them grenades?
Hank barked at Creed, who nodded, ripping two from his belt, unpinning them and lobbing them over the crate. The explosions were bone-jarring. Hank looked around the crate, seeing half the ghouls missing, and the other half prone on the ground, shell-shocked. Hank and Creed took advantage of the situation and finished the bastards off before they could come to. They left one alive, though, as seeing as the boss had disappeared, they needed questions answered. Hank slapped the ghoul across the face, stirring him awake. The ghoul looked around for a moment, dazed, but then came to, and his eyes filled with fear at the sight of the enchanted shotgun aimed at his groin.
You better tell us a tale, friend, and make it a good one, as it just might stop me from blowing you apart, piece by piece.
Hank felt the anger well inside of him. The old flame still burned strong.
Weaver ordered us to kidnap the fresh meat. It was all his doing. Please don't kill me,
pleaded the ghoul, its marred face filled with panic as Hank pumped the shotgun.
Where's Weaver now?
He was just here. It must have took a bone ship back to the mainland,
shouted the ghoul as Hank aimed a shotgun at his head.
Why, thank you,
smiled Hank, and then he pulled down on the trigger, blasting the ghoul's head apart into a fog of brain and blood.
That was Weaver? Asked Creed. He was just here.
Seems so.
Hank went and inspected the crate the ghouls had been obsessed over. A trillium ore.
Let's get this back to the bone ship. Gus will want his dues.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Back in the Nameless City, they'd gotten through the Evermarshes and the Black Forest with no trouble. It seemed their slaying of several harbingers had culled their kind, and none surfaced as they traversed the flames home. They pulled up outside Gus's gun shop, but Hank's eyes widened as the shop was on fire. Blue flames spat out through the windows, the beams in the roof cracking and splitting.
What in the underworld? It seems Weaver got wind of Gus's betrayal.
Hank switched back on the engine.
Where are we going now?
Hell if I know, but we ain't getting any more info from Gus, that's for sure.
They made their way to the precinct. The harbingers inside, which were usually docile, hissed at them as they passed. It seemed their journey had not gone unnoticed by the harbingers in the police department's employ either. They sat at their desk, waiting for the shit show to rain down, and they didn't have to wait long.
You two, get in here!
The chief was sat at his desk, withered face creased up into a plethora of wrinkles.
What's up, chief?
Asked Creed.
You two have some balls, I'll give you that. Going into the Evermarshes without leave, without backup. You two stupid? Or do you simply have a death wish?
They remained silent.
Tell me you got something, because I've about a dozen harbingers out there which want answers.
We found the Weaver, Hank said.
The chief's eyes lit up.
You kill him?
He got away, muttered Creed.
Well, that's not great, is it?
The chief sagged.
We wiped out most of his goons,
Hank replied.
He's in the wind, torched one of my informant's shops. He'll turn up.
You better hope he does. Now get back out there. We've a day and a half before the Nameless City goes rampant.
The chief looked down at the papers on his desk, and they were dismissed.
That weren't so bad,
Creed smiled as they climbed inside their car.
You have a funny way of looking at things, compadre.
Hank switched on the ignition.
Let's go get a drink.
They were sat at the bar sipping whiskey in Hank's favorite watering hole, the kind that doesn't ask questions. Hank just finished his second drink after giving away the memory of his second wife's face for the next round. The doorbell jingled. Creed looked around first and grabbed Hank, pulling him onto the floor. It was a good thing, too, as gunshots rippled through the air, making Hank almost shit himself right there and then. They hit the bar where they had just been sitting. Hank pulled out his revolver and crept behind cover, Creed following his lead. The shooter, or shooters by the sound of the amount of bullets, paused to reload. Hank stood, seeing four men dressed in black trench coats, toting Tommy guns. Hank aimed, let off a shot, and blasted the closest gunman's brains apart. Creed let off a shot, catching another of them in the arm. Two down, the remaining two gunmen turned and fled through the door, out into the street. Hank was right behind them, grabbing the dead gunman's discarded Tommy gun. Hank and Creed ran out into the street, just in time to catch the number plate of the white van the gunman must have gotten into. Back inside, the injured gunman was holding his arm, which was bleeding profusely.
"That looks like it hurts, friend," said Hank, kneeling down beside him. "Get me an ambulance," growled the gunman.
Hank punched the gunman in the face.
"What? Maybe we'll get you one if you talk. Make it quick, as my partner here has little patience."
Creed aimed his pistol against the gunman's forehead, pulling back on the hammer.
"Okay, shit! Weaver sent us to take care of you. He's holed up in the ghetto with a small army of ghouls behind him."
The gunman blanched as Hank stuck his finger into the bullet hole on his arm, making the gunman squirm like a worm on a hook.
"Damn it! That's all I know!"
screamed the gunman. Hank stood and gave the nod to Creed, who pulled down on the trigger, blasting the gunman's skull apart. They tore their way across the nameless city, siren pealing through the air, headed towards the ghetto. As they neared the tenements, Hank switched off the siren. But as soon as they entered the ghetto, a figure on top of one of the buildings let off a shot with a high-powered sniper rifle, and it hit the window, smashing through the glass, inches away from Creed's skull. It tore a hole through the back seat.
"Shit!"
Hank jammed down on the brakes, skidding sideways. They jumped out of the car, ran around to the trunk. Creed is the better shot, so he grabbed the sniper rifle. Hank settled for the shotgun once more. Another gunshot pealed through the air. The bullet hit the ground 2 steps to Hank's left.
"Holy fuck!"
Hank dove down behind the rear of the car. Creed took his time, lined up the shot, and pulled down on the trigger. The sniper rifle kicked back against Creed's shoulder. Hank glanced over the car, seeing the spray of red as the bullet found its mark.
"Good shot, partner."
Hank nodded.
"Ain't no sweat?"
The tenements surrounded them on all sides, but no other snipers seemed to be placed on the rooftops.
"We best find where this Weaver is holed up and quick," said Creed.
"Let's get on top of the sniper's nest, see what we can see."
Hank pulled the binoculars out of the trunk. They headed toward the tenement where the sniper had fired from, climbed the stairs, Hank going first with the shotgun already pumped. Luckily, no trouble showed itself.
"They must have heard the shots,"
Hank said as they filed out onto the roof.
"No doubt about it."
Creed went to the sniper's nest, where the ghoul was lying face down in a pool of blood. Hank surveyed the surrounding area with the binoculars, looking to the east. Creed peered through his scope to the west.
"Got movement," said Creed.
Hank ran across the roof looking to where Creed was pointing. 4 vans were tearing through the district at speed. Creed let off a shot. It tore through the window screen of the front runner, found its mark. The van swerved off the road and hit a pole.
"Nice. Keep shooting. I'll guard the stairs," said Hank.
Creed nodded. Hank ran back down the stairs, peering through the window, saw 2 vans come skidding around the corner. Creed must have put another driver out of commission. Hank aimed down the stairwell. Footsteps approached. A figure came running around the corner wearing a black trench coat, armed with an Uzi. Hank opened fire, ripping the bastard apart and spraying blood against the wall in a torrent. Another ghoul came tearing around the corner, opening fire before Hank could let off a shot. Hank ducked back behind the wall as bullets tore into where he had just stood. The ghoul was running up the stairs. Hank waited until he was at the top of the stairwell, butting him in the head with the shotgun. The ghoul stumbled, losing grip of his pistol, Hank aimed a shotgun and pumped it, but the ghoul had the presence of mind to dive to the side. The slug hit empty space. The ghoul jumped on Hank, punching him in the stomach. Hank struggled with him for a moment before overpowering the ghoul, knocking him onto his ass, and then blasted the fucker in the gut. Two down, who knew how many more to go? Creed appeared behind Hank.
There's too many, Hank!
Creed had the sniper rifle slung on his back, wielding his pistol. More footsteps on the stairwell, so they flee up onto the roof, barricading them by fitting a metal bar between the door's handle.
What the hell do we do now?
Creed has fear in his eyes. The ghouls are beaten against the door, and it's only a matter of time before they break through.
We call in backup.
Hank takes his radio, calling in their location. It'll be 5 minutes before they have reinforcements. Now it was a waiting game. The metal rod is bending, and after 2 more minutes, gives way and falls to the ground. They take cover in the sniper's nest, hiding behind sacks of sand as the ghouls break through the doorway and come streaming out onto the roof. Shots are exchanged. Hank shooting blindly by sticking his revolver over the sandbags. The ghouls have the advantage of numbers and have Hank and Creed pinned down. But just as the situation looks dire, chopper blades can be heard in the distance.
We're gonna make it!
Hank shouts over the gunshots. Creed only nods, slamming another magazine into his pistol. The chopper appears, hovering over them. And 4 snipers are aiming out the open side doors of the helicopter. The ghouls open fire, but the range is too far, and the snipers decimate their numbers. Soon the ghouls lose heart, turning and fleeing back through the doorway. They raid the warehouse to the north where the vans had appeared from, and find Moon bottled up in 12 jerry cans. Hank opens the containers outside, and Moon reappears in the sky. Back at the precinct, the chief calls them into his office.
Good work, you two. You got Moon back just in time. Is there any news about this Weaver character?
No sign of him, chief. He's either dead somewhere or in hiding. Hopefully the former.
Well, keep your ear to the street.
And with that, they were dismissed. Back outside in their car, they head towards home. That night, sitting in his apartment, Hank can't help but think back on the vision of Saul that had happened in the Evermarshes. Was it just a figment of his imagination? Or had his old partner showed him that there really was light at the end of the tunnel? Hank had never been an optimist, as his third wife had been fond of reminding him. But whatever it meant, the idea of Saul resting in heaven brought some shred of solace to his soul. The next day, Hank has an idea. He puts word on the street that he's sitting on 10 kilos of Etrillium and would hand off the lot to whoever fingered the Weaver's whereabouts. By noon, the whispers roll in.
DuPont says he can bring us to the Weaver,
says Creed, getting into the car.
You think we can trust him not to double-cross us?
DuPont was a local underworld artificer who had soaked up pretty much all of Vanessa's old contracts after Saul had shot her. So he owed Hank a favor in one sense, and in the other, why, it was good old greed that Hank could trust, for artificers would sell their mothers twice on a Sunday for just an ounce of Etrillium.
Let's find out.
They meet DuPont back in his local workshop, an abandoned warehouse north of the ghetto. DuPont is tall, skeletal thin, with a crooked eye that likes to wander. But the man was a gifted artificer, and was the man to go to now that Gus had been wiped off the map by the Weaver.
Where's my Etrillium?
Asked DuPont, seeing both Hank and Creed had entered the warehouse empty-handed.
You really think we're stupid enough to pay you before you find us the Weaver?
So where's he holed up now?
Hell, says DuPont with a smirk.
Come again?
Weaver ran out of the Nameless City after you killed his best goons.
DuPont fills them in.
He bought himself a pass out of here, bound to the Eternal Sea and beyond.
Nothing's beyond the Eternal Sea,
growls Hank, feeling like he's being played on the line like a fish.
That's why they call it eternal.
You really believe everything you're told?
Asked DuPont. So how are we going to get to him?
Why, we commandeer a harbinger to show us the way.
DuPont has a look of madness dancing in his eyes.
We do what now?
Hank is taken aback.
We promised a harbinger the Weaver's soul in exchange for it showing us the way. Harbingers cross the Eternal Sea constantly.
DuPont flicks his ponytail over his shoulder.
That's crazy enough to actually work, smiles Hank.
At the precinct, Hank corners a harbinger and fills the creature in about their crazy scheme. Its face is dark beneath the cloak, but Hank thinks he can sense a smile lurking beneath the drooping hood as it nods silently. So they were bound for hell, and it might just be their undoing. They fall into the car, and DuPont is pale-faced as the harbinger climbs in beside them in the back. At the port, they park and head to where the bone ships depart, looking for an empty barge, but all are guarded by harbingers. The fresh meat is being jettisoned from the Eternal Sea and loaded into buses, being driven into the Nameless City. After an hour of surveying the scene, they see an opening where one of the fresh meat tries to run away, back into the sea, and the harbingers swarm after him.
This is our chance,
says Hank, running to the nearest barge. They quickly push it out into the surf, and just as they are about to sail off, the harbingers spot them. Their screams are ghastly as they float through the air towards them. Hank lets off a warning shot and they slow, then aims at the closest harbinger and shoots it straight in the face, or where its face should be. It slows their approach to a stop and they drift out into the Eternal Sea. The further out they drift, the choppier the waves become, and soon they are being tossed and turned this way and that. The harbinger remains at the tiller, guiding them into oblivion, perhaps. Hank remains at the foredeck, watching the waves in fascination. Hours pass by, with strange stirrings happening in the waves surrounding them. Red eyes appear beneath the waves in places. Monsters lurking just below. As night passes into dawn, the sky begins to take up a crimson tinge.
It seems we're nearing our final destination,
DuPont says, approaching Hank. Creed sits in the corner, silent, watching the harbinger with unease, it seems.
What exactly are you hoping to gain out of this bargain? Besides the Trillium, of course,
asks Hank. DuPont shrugs.
My reasons are my own.
The red tinge intensifies into a glare, and red mist floats just above the waves. The sea becomes all the more tumultuous, knocking them side to side. Ahead of them appears a whirlpool, an enormous drain in the middle of the ocean, sucking down everything near it.
Watch out for the whirlpool!
Hank shouts, but the harbinger throws back its head and barks laughter. Directing them straight for it.
Holy fuck, holy fuck!
They rock forwards, straight into the whirlpool, and are sucked violently around in a circle. Then, before Hank's very eyes, they begin to sink, and the world turns dark. Hank comes to, his throat parched, stomach feeling like he ate some bad oysters. Looking around, he saw they were on a beach, the bone ship lying just over there. DuPont was unconscious,
and Creed was holding his pistol trained on the Harbinger.
What's going on?
This damn creature tried sucking DuPont's soul while we were out for the count. Hank blanches.
I guess it thought we were easy marks. But we need to get back, partner. Put your weapon away.
Creed sighs and holsters his pistol. Hank slaps DuPont across the face and he awakes with a start.
Come on. We need to find Weaver and finish what we started.
Hank offers DuPont his hand. The man takes it and stands.
This way.
Hisses the Harbinger, sailing past Creed and headed east inland. The thing's voice gave Hank the chills, and he dreaded to think what would happen if they had not woke before the creature had its way with them. They followed the Harbinger for hours, the heat growing from humid to downright oppressive. The land was sun-scorched, but there was no sun in the sky, and the desert stretched on for as far as the eye could see.
We need to stop and rest,
DuPont cried for the 100th time.
We stop when we find Weaver,
Hank growled back. Creed remained tight-lipped as usual. Buzzards circled in the air above, a bad omen. The ground was parched. No signs of habitation appeared on the horizon. Hank felt dizzy, his feet ached, and his head pounded.
What are you doing out here, Hank?
Saul's voice rippled through his mind. Hank waved the flies away, and the voice, which was merely his own delusion.
Your soul is lost, old friend. Turn back. There's still time to save yourself.
How much further?
Creed asked, voice raspy with dehydration. The Harbinger simply remained trudging along the desert floor without a glance back at them, so they followed.
You see? This creature is leading you into a trap.
Saul's voice echoed through his mind, making Hank shiver.
Maybe. Maybe not,
mumbled Hank.
What's that?
Asked Creed, walking alongside him.
Nothing.
Hank ignored his partner's stare. After two more hours, faint smudges appeared on the horizon. The Harbinger seemed to be headed toward them. DuPont was trailing behind, so Hank told him to hurry the fuck up. Soon the smudges grew to black dolmens, a dozen of them set in a circle. In the center was a red marble altar.
This doesn't look good, muttered Creed. What in the underworld are you playing at, huh?
Hank shouted at the Harbinger. It stretched out its arm and with a bony finger pointed to the altar.
What is it?
Asked Creed, voice shaky.
What's it want us to do?
I think it wants one of us to lie down on the altar.
DuPont approached them. The Harbinger nodded.
Well, I ain't doing it.
Creed folded his arms. Hank looked to DuPont, who shook his head.
Fine, I'll go.
Hank trudged to the altar and lay upon it. The Harbinger stood beside him, lifting its arms and hissing at the air. Instantly, thunderclouds appeared above them, swirling and forming into a dozen crimson skulls. Lightning pealed through the air, making Hank's head buzz as they struck each dolmen surrounding the altar one after the next. As the lightning hit the last dolmen, the altar became hot to touch, and Hank felt his skin sizzle. He laid back his head and closed his eyes. Voices played through his mind, chanting some unknown dialect. Tongue of demons, perhaps. The chanting grew louder until it drowned out any other thoughts in Hank's mind. After a few moments, the chanting subsided and he opened his eyes. The Harbinger was gone, as was Creed and DuPont. Figures appeared on the plain surrounding him, lurching forwards in a half-wolf, half-bear gait, loping their way into the circle.
Holy fuck!
Hank cursed, drawing his revolver and taking aim at the front runner. His bullet tore through the demon's skull, and the creature collapsed into a pile of ash. They were coming for him. Hank let off three more shots, but the demons were drawing nearer. A voice whispered across the plains then, an ethereal voice like shards of molten liquid running through every vein in Hank's body.
You have summoned the beast.
Hank let off two more shots and then reloaded. The demons were upon him then. He brandished his knife in one hand, letting off shot after shot with his gun. The ground throbbed with energy. The sky was dark red now. The storm clouds gathered, and blue lightning spiked down once more, striking the altar where he had been lying moments before.
Come on, you bastards!
Screamed Hank, and they came. Six of them lurched forwards. Hank lashed out at one with his knife but missed, and the demon slashed his side with its long, jagged claws. Hank butted the next one across the skull with his revolver and made it stumble back a step, and then shot it through the head. While his back was turned, though, a demon had crept around and now pounced onto his back, claws ripping into his flesh.
Ah!
He tossed the fucker off and jammed the knife down into its heart. If it had one, which it seemed to do, as the creature let out a bone-jarring moan of death. The remaining demons backed away. The storm clouds circled overhead, washing around in what looked like the beginnings of a tornado. With one more pealing lightning strike, the ground began to crack and open. The figures stormed around him, half shadow and half horror. The ground pulsed with energy. The beast was close to awakening. Hank let off two shots, looking around for his partner once more, but couldn't see him. He was surrounded. Checking his revolver, one bullet laid waiting for him. He stuck the revolver's barrel beneath his chin, watching the demons come closer. He pulled down on the trigger. But it clicked harmlessly. He cursed and then stuck the gun in its holster. One man with a knife against a dozen demons and whatever was coming from beneath the ground, which was still breaking apart, and the ground gave way. He fell.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something, but I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public would be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.
Hank landed and rolled. Seeing a black figure in the corner of his vision, he dived aside and felt a gush of air pass his skull. He came back onto his feet and faced the figure. It was tall, at least 8 feet high, wide as a wagon, with four arms which each ended in a paw bearing claws. The demons hadn't fallen into the crevice, so Hank was at least grateful for that bit of luck. The beast rushed at him, yellow fangs snarling, claws flashing, and Hank had the presence of mind to dive aside once more. The beast skidded sideways, turned and faced him.
Come on, you ugly bastard,
growled Hank, swishing the knife through the air. The beast came roaring at him, and he bashed it across the skull with the pommel of his knife. making it skitter across the ground in retreat. It threw back its head and let out another vicious snarl. The beast came at him once more, and Hank slashed it across the stomach. But the beast was fast, faster than him, and ripped its claws through his leg. He stumbled back, both of them wary of the other. A gunshot rippled through the air, and a burst of green goo exploded from the beast's skull. Hank looked around and saw Creed standing above the crevice.
You good, partner?
Creed shouted down.
Am now, thanks.
Hank jammed his knife inside his sheath.
Need to find a way out of here,
he said, looking from one passageway to the next.
I'll meet you on the other side.
Creed nodded and then disappeared from view. Hank took the eastern passageway, it being narrow and stifling hot. Soon he came out onto a plateau, and Creed appeared from behind the wall, followed by DuPont and the Harbinger. Hank strode up to the Harbinger.
And what exactly did you just fucking do to us?
He snarled at the creature. The Harbinger seemed to smile, and then turned, floating along the ground, headed northeast. Trudging through the desert became a monotonous journey, one filled with endless silence. So when the Harbinger stopped on a rise ahead of them, Hank and Creed shared a wary glance with each other.
What is it? What do you see?
The Harbinger pointed to the east. Once atop the hill, Hank grimaced. A high, dark tower pierced its way into the sky, its whitewashed walls glowing red from the tinge of the crimson sky.
We're going in there, aren't we?
Muttered Creed. DuPont backed away.
I don't think you'll be needing me any further.
The man tried to run, but Creed hauled ass and caught him by the collar.
We're sticking together whether you like it or not,
Creed shouted into DuPont's face. They approached the tower. There seemed to be no entrance, no windows, nothing.
And how in the underworld do we get inside?
Hank asked the Harbinger. It lifted a hand and pressed its bony fingers against the tower's south-facing wall. Instantly, the ground vibrated, making Hank's teeth clack together. Within two heartbeats, a door appeared where the Harbinger had touched.
Great,
sighed Creed, drawing his pistol.
Lead the way, boss.
Hank nodded, and then following the Harbinger as it passed through the now open doorway, he entered into the inky blackness that was the interior of the tower. As soon as DuPont crossed the threshold, the door slammed shut, leaving them in darkness. Luckily, Hank and Creed had stuck fresh batteries into their flashlights, which they switched on.
Holy fuck,
muttered Creed, and Hank had to agree. Hundreds of human-looking bones lay scattered about the floor. The Harbinger glided over these without making a sound, but the rest of the group noisily made their way to the bottom of a stairwell. They climbed. Minutes felt like hours in the stifling heat, which was far more intense than the desert outside. Hank wiped sweat from his brow, focusing on keeping the dark outline of the Harbinger in view, as he didn't trust the creature to not disappear on them the first chance it got. It was coming around the next corner that they heard muffled footsteps coming towards them. The Harbinger stopped, pointing a finger at the stairwell ahead of them, and hissed. Hank knew when to take a hint, and the creature was warning them. Of what, though? Without knowing why, he drew his revolver and crouched, and Creed was right beside him.
What is it? Dunno. But whatever's coming has the Harbinger on edge.
The footsteps grew closer and closer, until Hank could smell a greasy, corpse-like stench wafting down the stairwell. That was when they saw it. The demon came shuffling down the steps, large, larger than a goddamn truck. Its skin was a sickly red, eyes bulging yellow. It was outfitted in armor, carrying a mace that looked like it had seen some usage. Hank didn't wait for a signal.
He let off three shots, but they bounced off the demon's armor harmlessly.
Shit!
Hank cursed. Creed was the better shot, but even his bullets didn't find a weakness in the armor. The demon was at the bottom of the stairwell now, and it gripped its mace tightly. Hank unsheathed his enchanted dagger. Creed also drew his, and they circled around the demon. It swished its mace through the air, then lurched as it swung its weapon at Hank, who dived aside just in time to avoid being pummeled. Creed took advantage of the demon's back being turned and drove his dagger between the armor. For this is what Hank had guessed as the demon let out a blood-curdling moan. It turned fast and swiped at Creed with its free hand, knocking him back off his feet. And Creed was thrashed against the wall. He slid down to the floor unconscious. The demon faced Hank once more, throwing back its head and letting out a cackle. Hank rushed at it. The demon swung its mace and Hank dove aside as the mace went crashing into the ground where he had just stood. He rolled back up onto his feet and kicked at the demon's exposed side, looking for a gap between the armor plates. But the demon gave him no time to press in, and it brought its mace around to bear. Hank saw the mace come swishing around towards him, but just as the sharp curved blades were about to cut into him, the demon dropped the mace. Hank stepped back, unsure of himself. Then he saw that the harbinger had gripped the demon by the neck and was sucking its soul out from its gaping mouth. Moving around the demon, Hank crouched down beside Creed and made sure he was still alive. He was. Looking back, Hank shuddered as the harbinger was finishing the demon. And after it had sucked its soul, it released its grip, and the demon collapsed to the floor. Creed awoke. DuPont was stood halfway down the steps just behind them, and Hank waved for him to come up.
What in the underworld happened?
Asked Creed.
It seems our soul-sucking friend has a penchant for demon souls.
Hank reloaded his revolver. The harbinger took one look at them, and then turned and floated up the stairwell.
Well, I guess we'd best be after it.
Hank followed the harbinger, with a shaken Creed and silent DuPont following in his wake. The stairs ended, and they entered a room filled with mirrors adorning the walls. As they entered, a dark figure appeared on the far side of the room, dressed in a long black cloak. Its back was turned on them.
So, you found me then?
The figure spoke, a man's voice, filled with ice.
And who exactly are you, friend?
Asked Hank, aiming his revolver.
I go by many aliases, but you may call me the Weaver.
The figure turned to face them. Hank dropped the revolver.
Hello, old friend.
Saul, Hank's old partner, the one he had held as the man left the underworld behind, stood before him now.
That's impossible.
Hank took a step backwards.
You're dead. I was dead, you say? Why, I still am, in many ways. But I also feel alive, old friend.
Saul clicked his fingers and the doorway banged shut behind them.
Why? How?
Hank felt the ground spin beneath him as he tried to make sense of it all.
I was always crooked, Hank. I was a soul sucker. But more than that, I sold my soul long ago to the devil.
Saul paced sideways.
And now I have brought you here, old friend, to offer you the chance to join me.
Creed glanced sideways at Hank, the question obvious in his eyes. Do we shoot? Hank felt the confusion give way then to old reliable anger. The only feeling he had left, he guessed, but it worked just as well as any.
I never knew you, did I?
Hank balled his fists.
You should have stayed dead, old friend. But then, you were never one to toe the line, were you?
Saul stopped pacing.
The line? Hank, I always knew you were naive. But come now. The Nameless City is a cesspit. Ghouls run rampant in the city now. And it will only be a matter of time. Until what exactly? Until they find a new boss.
Saul smirked.
You?
Saul nodded.
Why not? The devil is king on these shores. But I have played my hand well, and can come and go as I please. For a price, of course. And what price would I have to pay to join you?
Asked Hank. Saul looked away from Hank.
These fools who followed you here. Allow me to harvest their souls, and you shall be taken into the fold.
Hank's lip lifted in disgust.
My partner is right here beside me.
Hank looked sidelong at Creed, who nodded.
You?
Hank looked back at Saul.
I don't know who or what you are. Then enough games.
Saul stomped his boot against the ground. The room shook violently. Hank aimed his revolver and let the bullet fly. But instead of finding a mark, it smashed into the mirror, and Saul appeared in an adjoining mirror. The tower began to tilt then, or at least the ground did. Hank slid across the floor, reaching his hands out to try to find something to hold on to. But the three of them were hurled across the room. The Harbinger, though, floated in midair. Hank pointed a finger at Saul, who was maniacally laughing now.
You wanted his damn soul? Go get it!
The Harbinger floated slowly toward the mirror, reaching out its bony fingers. But as they came into contact with the mirror, the Harbinger tilted back its head and moaned.
You think your feeble creature can stop me? I run the Nameless City now, old man. And you made a grave mistake coming here.
Hank aimed again and shot. The mirror smashed to 1,000 pieces, and Saul simply appeared in another. Hank and Creed combined didn't have enough bullets to smash every mirror, as there must have been 100 dotted about the room. DuPont was sliding the fastest, headed head first, and he smashed against the mirror, blood splattering about him as his neck broke and skull was caved in.
Holy fuck,
muttered Hank, sliding faster towards sure oblivion. But just as he was about to collide, the room tilted violently around the other way. Creed was wide-eyed as they slid from one side of the room to the other. But Hank saw that the Harbinger was clawing its way further inside of the mirror with Saul in it, moaning as its bones began to take flame. The blue fire alighting against the mirrors and reflecting light everywhere.
No!
Saul cried as the light from the flames burned into him, and the Harbinger clawed its way in deeper, its black cloak now taking flame. But there was no stopping the creature. With a thunderous cracking sound, the mirror gave way, and the Harbinger now held Saul in its grip as it opened the maw of its mouth and began sucking his old partner's soul inside of itself. The room leveled out then, and Hank came to a rolling halt 10 paces away from the Harbinger.
Please, Hank,
Saul moaned as the white vapor that was his soul was being inhaled.
Save me!
Hank aimed his revolver, but then lowered it.
You've forsaken your own soul a long time ago, old friend.
Without looking back, he turned and strode towards the door, abandoning his old partner to the Harbinger's woe, Creed following closely behind him. They waited outside for the Harbinger, and then made a speedy retreat away from the crumbling mess that was the remains of the tower. Once back on the bone ship, they headed back towards the Eternal Sea, and beyond that, the Nameless City.
"You could have sold me out," Creed said,
the first words he had spoken since they climbed aboard. They were nearing the beach now, and the Black Forest was visible beyond, with the flames lighting up the way.
"For what? A chance to live forever in that forsaken land?"
Hank placed his hand on Creed's shoulder.
"You're my partner, Creed. Not him."
"Thanks, I guess." Back in the Nameless City, they reported to the chief, and by the sorry state of the two of them, the chief asked no further questions after being told the Weaver had been dealt with. They were sat in Hank's usual bar. The music on the radio reminded Hank of his first wife, so he sold that memory for a bottle of the finest bourbon on the shelf. Creed and Hank clinked glasses.
"What are we toasting?" "To being alive. Well, sort of."
"And to kicking the Weaver's ass. Ghoul didn't stand a chance."
After dropping Creed home, Hank took the scenic route home. Moon was high in the sky, hovering over Lonely Mountain, and it seemed to shine only for him right then and there. A part of him had wanted to join Saul. He couldn't deny that. But whatever the road now held in store for him, whether it be eternal duties in this damned city or a bullet to the brain, he would carry the mantle placed upon his shoulders, for the citizens of the Nameless City needed him. And he would always take up that call, to arms in service of those weaker than him. Because he was a Death Patrol detective until the day he died. And he was a fucking good one. And that was the Death Patrol 2 Untouchables by our old pal Rory Duane. A little about the author. Rory, also known as RCJ Duane, is an author living in the Midlands of Ireland. He is currently writing a young adult novel based on a dream he had, titled Delvere, College of Dreams and Magic. You can check out his website at roryduaneart.wordpress.com. And you can find him on Facebook, YouTube, and Patreon as well. Hey, thanks, Rory.
God bless you. And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment, 10 bananas.
Well, I'm afraid this is where we part ways, friend. At least till tomorrow night on the Sinister Somnolence YouTube channel.
But first, we'd like to give a special thanks to our latest reviewer of the Splittail Files, Brenda DeMayo. She says, "If I've learned anything in my 20-plus years of knowing how to read, it's this. Splittail Files is a must-read. Hilarious, shocking, offensive, all the qualities of a damn fine read. Love the book? Think the little voices in your head do the story justice? Well, they don't. So head on over to YouTube and check out the voice acting on this here collection of hilarity. Your life will be forever scarred. Changed. I mean changed. Damn it, Dingle." Hey, thanks, Brenda. She's definitely a guy who's got that bell icon clicked, and we definitely appreciate it every time you show up. So may the wind be at your back, and may the road rise up to meet you. I'll see you all at the Weekend Abode tomorrow night. And as always, go fuck yourselves. Come on, Chester. Let's get the hell out of here. Oh, yeah, you're high as a kite. Well, let me go get the wheelbarrow. Hang on.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.